On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us, everybody. So, last Thursday, like lots of folks, I vowed to start the new year by getting back to the kind of healthy eating I vaguely remember engaging in before the blur of the holidays. My resolve was steady, my intentions noble, and I got off to a great start with a jog through Baltimore's Inner Harbor. And in that pre-dawn darkness, I was awash in a sea of optimism and a sense that my willpower had never been stronger. It lasted about 14 hours. The French fries that I had for dinner that night were not exactly part of my original dietary plan for the day, but such is the case for me and many, many others. It seems that our willpower is often outmatched. So this morning, in this season of New Year's resolutions, a conversation about willpower and what scientists have learned about why some people seem to have more of it than others. And to walk us through, we turn to the nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle. She's a licensed nutritionist from Baltimore and the creator of the Nutrition Diva podcast. She's written 6 books, the latest of which is called Nutrition Diva's Secrets for a Healthy Diet. Happy New Year.
Good morning, Tom. Happy New Year.
Good to see you. So we are learning a lot more about this, the nature of willpower. People are studying this, and it does seem that there are some folks who have more of it than others. Certainly, it seems to me that almost everyone has more of it than me.
Yeah, like many other traits, some people just have a larger endowment of willpower than others. Maybe some of it is trained, learned. But the interesting thing to come out about willpower, and this was research launched in the late 90s by Roy Baumeister, is that willpower seems to be an exhaustible resource, that the more you use, the less you have left. And that can be pretty bad news, because often we run out of willpower before we reach our goals.
So is this something that you can, if it's an exhaustible resource, can you figure out how to acquire larger quantities?
Yeah, there's some mixed opinions on that. There are some researchers who believe that if you sort of coach people and help them believe in themselves and that they're going to have more willpower, send them positive messages about their willpower, that they will indeed have more willpower.
But you seem skeptical about that.
Well, I just have seen study after study that illustrate in really interesting ways that when we spend energy resisting impulses, that then we're less able to resist the next impulse or temptation. And even worse than that, it also diminishes our mental capacity that we have to spend on other tasks. So for example, let's say you go into a staff meeting and you're, fresh into your New Year's resolution, and somebody has brought a plate of homemade chocolate chip cookies and they smell amazing. You know they're going to be fantastic, but you're good. You draw on your willpower. You spend 90 minutes resisting those cookies. And then on your way out of the meeting, you pass this bowl of cheap chocolate, nowhere near as good as those cookies. But the fact that you just spent 90 minutes resisting those cookies makes it much more likely that you're going to succumb to those chocolates that aren't even that tempting. And not only that, the fact that you spent that 90 minutes resisting those homemade chocolate chip cookies also reduced your ability to function in that meeting, reduces your concentration, reduces your problem-solving capacity.
Right, so some of these studies have shown that you're really better, or less good, rather, at cognitive tasks after you've expended some willpower.
Exactly.
This is getting to
We'll start with the bad news, and then we'll move to the good news.
Because, that exact thing happened to me, the day after New Year's. We went out to dinner with friends, and the four of us ordered entrees, and two people didn't realize that the entrees came with French fries, right? So there they are. They're sitting in front of us, all four of us. And we all vowed, we're not going to eat these. Well, they were all gone, eventually, because we just broke down. And that does happen. You try, but you can't. And when you do it, it's finite. So
say you had withstood the temptation of the French fries, you're that much more likely to
and eaten cookies
or ordered dessert.
Yeah, right.
But I think that the insight here is that if we are really trying to make a change for the positive, we would be well advised not to rely too heavily on willpower and to look instead for other strategies that we can use to propel us toward success.
So before we get off willpower, there is a study done by a person named Carol Dweck at Stanford University. It was written about last summer, that says that if you sort of convince people, if you make them, lead them to believe that they have this abundance of willpower, it can negate the effects of using it up as a finite resource. In other words, it sort of upends a bit of the research that you're talking about with Dr. Baumeister.
Right. That was sort of a study to refute this idea of willpower as a finite resource. And they did it a couple of different ways. One version, they just asked people to say how much willpower, are you somebody that has a lot of willpower or not that much willpower? And the people people that said they had more willpower than demonstrated greater willpower. And some people wondered, well, maybe people just know themselves, you know? They're actually representing what they've learned to be true about themselves. But yeah, there was some effect in coaching people and you know, stoking them up to believe that their willpower was going to propel them through a task that made that more likely to happen. So maybe there's a self-fulfilling mm-hmm. prophecy here.
Well, let's talk about some of these strategies that supplement willpower. Let's assume that willpower isn't going to be enough to get us through our New Year's resolution.
Yes, let's do assume that.
All right, fair enough. So what do you suggest? I mean, one of the things you talk about, you've written on your blog, you call it engineering your environment.
Yes, I am a big fan of work that's coming out of Cornell University, Brian Wansink, and also Eastern Illinois, my friend Jim Painter. They do this great research on behavioral economics. Maybe you've heard that term thrown around as it applies to food and diet. And they show that we can really construct environments in our homes and in our schools. They do a lot of work in school cafeterias that change our behavior without requiring us to make the tough choice. For example, they go into school cafeterias and there's usually a freezer there full of ice cream treats. And it usually has a clear glass lid, clear plastic lid. And when they just cover that up with contact paper so that you can't see the ice cream as you walk by the cooler, kids don't buy as much ice cream or eat as much ice cream. And then on the other side of the equation, if they put a big bowl of fruit right by the checkout, fruit sales go up. And, you know, this is exactly what marketers do to get us to buy the things they want us to buy when they're organizing our supermarkets and grocery store displays. They're directing us towards certain purchases that have the highest profit margin but may not be the best choice for us. So I say, if they can do it to us, why couldn't we do it to ourselves in a positive way and organize our home environments to help us make the better choices and help it make it more painless to do that? So
store all the chocolate under the mattress.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Well, rule number one is don't bring it into the house. You know, I have...
That's a bad rule.
It's essential for me. I have great willpower in the grocery store, horrible willpower once I'm home. Mm-hmm. So my, you know, solution is just not to bring it into the house, because I know if it comes in the front door, I know what's going to happen next.
Right.
But if you feel like you have to keep that kind of stuff in the house, you know, in case an emergency guest comes, isn't
That's
that
right.
always
That's
our
right. It's
excuse?
It's all altruistic.
Right. It sounds really silly, but don't put that stuff that you really don't want to be eating a lot of in that cupboard that you're in and out of 100 times a day, the one that's right at eye level, the one that's right next to the refrigerator. You know the one I mean,
mm-hmm,
right?
I do.
Make it harder to get to. Make it not in your constant line of vision. And then put the things that you do want to be eating front and center. So you can do the same thing in your refrigerator. You know, when you open that refrigerator, have the first thing your eye sees the cut up vegetables that you made that morning to snack on. And it sounds so simple, but it really does change the way people eat. And it doesn't require your conscious, you know, it doesn't require willpower.
Monica Reinagle is the nutrition diva. We're talking about diet strategies and willpower strategies on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. You also talk about redirection, which is something I think is a term that I've heard associated with child,
yes,
you know, rearing and babysitting.
Yes. Well, anyone who has ever been in charge of a toddler knows that if the child picks up something you don't want them to have, you don't just take it out of their hand. You offer them something else instead, you know, and so that you redirect their attention to the thing that you do want them to be doing. And I've found that when it comes to dieting, we are all basically operating at the level of toddlers. So we need to use this strategy for ourselves. And instead of focusing on what we are depriving ourselves or avoiding, to focus on the positive. There was a brilliant study done a couple of years back in Europe. I love the way they illustrated this. They took two groups of dieters. They put them both on diets. And one group, they told them all the stuff they should eat less of. Eat less sugar, eat less fat, you know, watch your calories and all the things that they were supposed to be restricting. And the other group, they said, eat more vegetables, eat more fish, you know, eat more whole grains. They focused on what they should be eating more of. And that group that was focusing on the positive lost more weight, kept it off for longer. And I think it shows that when we're trying to change behavior, we do well to focus on the new positive behaviors that we want to adopt instead of just that tunnel vision on the thing that we're trying
something.
To not do. It's like, you know.
Sure. And you've written a lot about this. There are different kinds of diets, different kinds of approaches to diets. I mean, at one point, I think you sort of divided them into three categories: the metabolic, the behavioral, and the epidemiological. right? Now we're talking about, that sounds all very fancy.
It does.
Right? These three different categories of diet.
That.
But yeah, you did write that. But there are different diets that would play to different strengths and levels of willpower, right? So when you're figuring out, you know, do I do the no fat diet, the no carb diet, the, you know, the Mediterranean diet, the whatever diet? Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who are now fasting a couple of days or taking very few calories on 2 or 3 days a week, and then the rest of the time eating normally. They seem to have success with that. I mean, is there a diet, you know, different people are going to succeed better by eating, by using different eating strategies, right?
Well, you could certainly look at those different dieting strategies through that lens of how much willpower does it require. And that intermittent fasting trend, which has really picked up speed in the last year or two that you mentioned, where you don't diet every day, but 1 or 2 days a week, you fast entirely or you eat just a very few number of calories. Well, think about that. Then you're really only exercising your willpower 1 or 2 days a week, and the other days you're not. And so if that is an exhaustible resource, you're not, you know, you're recharging your batteries in between. It seems to be very successful for people. They can kind of stick to a pretty strict regimen 1 or 2 days a week and then relax the other 5 days. And in the end, the net turns out to be effective.
And we're talking, I guess, like maybe 400 calories for women, 500 calories for men, something like that in a day.
Right.
So for most people, that's one meal, you know,
or a
small meal at that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And no particularly deleterious side effects to that?
I certainly wouldn't want people eating 400 or 500 calories a day every day for a week. But for a single day, you know, for most people who are in reasonably good health, that's not going to be a problem. And, you know, there's a couple of other non-weight loss benefits associated with intermittent fasting. It can also, you know, help with blood sugar levels and, you know, other kinds of disease risks and have anti-aging benefits. So there's some, it's not for everyone. And I think certainly anybody who has ever struggled with any kind of compulsive eating disorder where they might be, you know, binging or something, that's probably not the approach for them. But for a lot of folks, that has really been a great solution. And it kind of makes sense when you think about willpower as a finite resource.
And some of these things are subtle changes. They're not gigantic, you know, makeovers of how you live your life. I mean, putting certain things on certain shelves in the cupboard is a fairly subtle, you know, small thing to do, but it can have a big effect.
A few years ago, there was a dieting book called The 9-Inch Diet by Alex Bogusky, and his entire insight was that if we just shrink the size of our dinner plates, we will eat less. And, you know,
sort of makes sense.
Well, yeah, and the average dinner plate over the last 40 years has gone from 9 inches, which is what he was suggesting, to 13 inches. If you think about your play settings at home, how they've gradually gotten bigger. And there's a lot of research, again, out of Cornell University showing that, yes, we eat less and we're just as satisfied if we serve ourselves on smaller plates. So that is a pretty easy shift.
Exactly. Oh, cool. All right. Well, Monica Reinagle, the Nutrition Diva, always great to see you. Happy New Year and good luck with your willpower.
To you as well, Tom.
We've got a link to Monica's most recent blog post. It's about weight loss myths, and you can find it on our website. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. Tomorrow morning, we meet the new directors of the Contemporary and Clayworks, two arts organizations that have undergone some significant changes in recent times. We'll find out what they're going to be doing in their new positions. And Sheila will continue our weekly series, The Checkup. That's all happening tomorrow morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.